At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
We go to Baltimore today, one city block there, and black women building for their future. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tuesday today, 11 August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Baltimore coming up in the second half of the program, but we begin with this. It is not often, I will grant you, that college football, the majority leader of the United States Senate, and Airbnb are mentioned in the same breath. But these are unusual times in which we find ourselves, I think you'll agree. So here we go. First of all, football. Both the Big Ten and Pac-12 conferences announced today that they are not going to be playing football or any other sports this fall. They will revisit in the spring. Yes, there is a marketplace angle. Lots of money in college ball, of course, but come on, that's too easy. I mention it to point out that we are not really in charge of anything, college football or this economy, the viruses. And that gets us to Senator Mitch McConnell, who said today that negotiations on a new support package for this economy are at a stalemate. That's his word, and we kind of knew it, but when somebody says it out loud, it resonates most specifically in the markets today, which turned south on Senator McConnell's comments. And thus, item three, and another sign of the disconnect between the markets and the actual virus economy. Markets are high, virus is too. Here's the item. Airbnb, in a report today by the Wall Street Journal, is about to file to go public and take advantage of the aforementioned investor enthusiasm. Now, why the long windup? Well, because there's a zillion things going on in this economy right now, not all of which make sense, but all of which matter, and all of which, in ways big and small, depend on what we do about the virus. All right, moving on. In labor market news, there is this from Uber and Lyft and the state of California. A judge here has ruled the rideshare companies have to reclassify their drivers as employees rather than as the independent contractors they are at the moment. Changing the paperwork is a big deal. Employees get things like paid sick leave and eligibility for unemployment benefits and health insurance. By happenstance, perhaps, Uber's CEO, Dara Khosrowshahi, says in the New York Times op-ed pages that the change would come at the expense of flexibility, what he calls the lifeblood of the gig economy. And he says, what we need is a third way for workers who aren't employees, but also aren't contractors. So from the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino takes that apart a little bit.
Independent contractor or employee. Under labor law, workers in America have to be classified as one or the other. Paul Oyer, an economist at Stanford, says that binary system goes back to the early 20th century when work looked pretty different.
So the law isn't perfect. There's a spectrum of possible work relationships, and we want to both protect workers along that spectrum, but also allow some amount of flexibility.
While the pandemic has highlighted the need for better protections for gig workers, most still prefer to be independent so they can set their own hours. Gig platforms have argued that won't be possible if workers are employees.
That is just untrue.
Benjamin Sachs is a labor law expert at Harvard.
You can be an employee and have an entirely flexible work arrangement.
And many people do, especially right now. But Seth Orenberg, a law professor at Duquesne University, says allowing employees to set their own hours often doesn't make business sense.
An employee that brings in $500 a month and costs $1,500 a month just for healthcare doesn't add up economically.
These distinctions could become increasingly important as the pandemic accelerates changes to employment beyond the gig economy, says NYU business professor Arun Sundarajan.
Many companies have let go tons of full-time employees, and so they have a chance to reconstruct their workforce and work arrangements.
He says with so many workers out of the office and working independently, white-collar work could start to look more like the gig economy. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
It has, quite possibly, escaped your memory that there is still a trade war going on. Yes, China for sure. Also, though, Europe. This week, the Trump administration decided to quadruple tariffs on European wines and spirits from 25% to, yes, quadrupling 100%. These are tariffs first imposed last year, if you can remember that far back, in a dispute over European airplane subsidies. Marketplace's Justin Ho is on the trade war beat today.
European suppliers tried to keep prices down for the first few months after the tariffs took effect last October. Then, in January, Lorena Asensios, the wine buyer for Astor Wines and Spirits in New York City, says wine prices started rising, and
prices are still going up. I can see they're significantly higher.
And with the pandemic and the prospect of higher tariffs, Asensios says she's importing less wine, simply out of caution.
At this point, my hands are up in the air. What else can happen at this point?
Alcohol distributors often rely on European imports to keep their lights on because the profit margins tend to be higher than on domestic products, says Eric Sagelbaum, a sommelier and consultant.
In order to have a diversified portfolio where they can even represent American wineries, they've got to be making money on European wineries.
Sagelbaum says wholesalers and distributors can absorb some of the costs of tariffs. But when those costs get passed along, they're likely to hurt another industry that's already in crisis, restaurants.
The end result is restaurant prices go up dramatically, restaurant sales get diminished, restaurants start closing.
The underlying problem here is that wine and liquor are basically luxury items, and consumers are uncertain about spending on luxuries in the middle of a pandemic, says Tom Perko of BevMark Consulting.
Everybody's suffering, and you go to the root of the matter, and it comes down to consumers being able to, you know, have what used to be a little affordable luxury, and now they can't.
A bipartisan group of 13 senators has asked the U.S. Trade Representative to remove the tariffs. The decision is likely to come this week. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Wall Street Today? Hello, Senator McConnell. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Back in the early days of this pandemic, Americans were applying for food stamps, SNAP, it's called officially, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, at a record rate. So to make sure people could get those benefits quickly, the Department of Agriculture let states waive a requirement that new applicants be interviewed, and it let those states put off having to recertify people already on SNAP. But those waivers end in September. And as Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports, that could mean the kinds of backlogs the government was hoping to avoid in the first place.
Joseph Baker was surprised how quickly he was able to get SNAP benefits when he applied in April.
When I applied, they were like, well, you qualify for emergency assistance. We're going to have a card to you in 5 days. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's great.
He had just lost his job as a pawnbroker and a firearms instructor in Florida, and he was scared about being able to cover all his bills and feed his two kids. But within days, he says,
they provided me a card, and I was able to immediately put fresh fruit and vegetables in the house.
More than 6 million people applied for SNAP benefits between February and May. In some states, the rate of applications doubled or tripled.
We went from an average of about 6,500 applications a week to our highest, which was 20,000 in a week.
Duke Storin is the commissioner of the Virginia Department of Social Services, and he says that even at that high point,
we maintained our timely processing of applications.
But he says that was only possible because the USDA allowed states to approve all new applicants without interviewing them and put off more than 150,000 recertifications.
Had we had to do all those interviews and all those renewals, we never would have been able to keep up.
Storin is worried Virginia won't be able to keep up this fall if the waivers expire, because there's likely to be another big spike in SNAP applications now that Washington has let federal unemployment benefits expire.
Every single state is facing this exact challenge.
Food banks are worried that if USDA doesn't renew the waivers, more people will go hungry. Teresa McCormick is with the Second Harvest Heartland Food Bank in Minnesota.
Without these waivers, it slows down people's ability to be able to access these benefits. It can take a long time.
And the longer it takes, she says, the more they'll have to rely on food banks, which will not have the capacity to fill in the gaps. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
This could change, I suppose, depending on how the next couple of weeks go. But a study from Burbio, that's a data company that aggregates school and community calendars, they say more than half of K through 12 public school students are going to be in class virtually this coming semester. That means parents are buying different kinds of back-to-school gear as we settle in for the long or longer, I guess, haul. Marketplace's Erica Barris has more now on the latest disruption to the back-to-school economy.
Shopping for school supplies for his kids this year? Not easy for father of three, Scott Witt of Menlo Park, California.
It was terrible. It was really kind of informed by a combination of panic and uncertainty and pragmatism.
Because he still doesn't know if the kids' classes will be in person, online, or a mix. This spring, when his children had to abruptly finish the school year at home.
You know, we sort of duct tape and band-aided a school together.
Back-to-school shopping is mirroring what parents may have bought for themselves at the start of the pandemic, says Daniel McCarthy, a marketing professor at Emory.
We need furniture to make sure that they've got a good learning environment. Where do we go? Well, wouldn't it be convenient to have that furniture shipped to our door?
Last week, e-retailer Wayfair posted its first profit since going public, driven in part by the work and school from home situation. And IKEA has seen an uptick in kids' school furniture. The National Retail Federation's Catherine Cullen says parents are also buying laptops, tablets, and
families also are more likely to buy things like speakers or headphones this year. If you have multiple kids learning at home, if possibly one or more parents is also still working from home, the family does need a sense of privacy.
With all that comes a lot of spending. Rod Sides, a retail analyst with Deloitte, says
we figured with the pandemic and with unemployment that perhaps spending would drop.
But Deloitte research actually found it went up by 2%. Father of three, Scott Witt, ended up buying a mix of everything. Notebooks, electronics, and three desks.
The kids now feel, even with all this uncertainty going around, at least they have this sturdy place to work that is not doubling as a kitchen table.
The cost? $1,200 for the desks alone. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Coming up.
And you go, and it just completely is not what you expected.
Food trucks in a pandemic. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 104 points today, 0.3%, 27,686. The NASDAQ down 185, that's 1.6%, 10,782 there. The S&P 500 declined 26 points, 0.8%, 33.33. New polling from the research firm IRI looks at the impact of a possible second round of $1,200 checks. McConnell's stalemate notwithstanding, 27% of the people who got that first payment spent it mostly on groceries and everyday household goods and are likely to spend new relief money the exact same way. IRI says the meat and produce categories are probably going to benefit the most from the new stimulus dollars. Bonds fell, yield on the 10-year T-note to a relatively high, given the way things are going, 0.64%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. At the last count by the Census Bureau, 47% of black households in this country own their own homes. 76% of white households do. That's one of the clearest signs of the systemic economic racism here. And yet, in majority black communities like Baltimore, there are thousands of houses just sitting, empty. Marketplace's Amy Scott has been reporting on that ongoing vacancy crisis in Baltimore for a couple of months now. More than 16,000 buildings are on the city's official vacancy list. And that number has been more or less the same for a decade, even after millions of dollars in investment. That doesn't mean there hasn't been progress in some neighborhoods, though. Amy's been following the evolution of a single block in West Baltimore.
When I first met Quanche Henderson, she was wearing a mask, but not for the reason we all do now. This was early March, before the pandemic had really arrived in Baltimore, and she was throwing a Sunday morning cleaning party.
There are trash grabbers here if you want some.
Quanche had roped in a bunch of friends, family, and co-workers from her job at the Maryland Health Department to help clean up an empty lot on a mostly abandoned block in Druid Heights, a neighborhood in West Baltimore. Wearing dust masks, double gloves, and shoe covers, her makeshift crew filled a dumpster with old hoses, fallen branches, dirty blankets, and all kinds of other trash.
You don't know what you're going to run into out here.
And it was a celebration. At 28, Quanche was about to become a homeowner on this block, the first in her family.
This is just a great feeling to have so many people come out in support of this.
Including her mom, Yolanda Betts.
I'm so proud of her. She beat me to the punch. I'm happy for her. So now I have somewhere to go.
Quanche was buying her new place through a nonprofit called Black Women Build. The group buys abandoned houses, works with black women to restore them, and then sells the houses to the women at affordable prices. Quanche took me inside her small row house for a quick tour.
Yeah, this is it.
There were the white kitchen cabinets she installed, the freshly painted bedrooms, the heated floor in the bathroom.
It's like my feet are being kissed.
It's a long way from the public housing Quanche grew up in with her seven brothers and sisters.
it takes my breath away, really, when I think about where I came from and where I am now and then where I plan to go. This will literally change the trajectory of, I think, what my siblings can think is possible, because now they see it.
And that's why Black Women Build exists, to change the trajectory of Black women by helping them create wealth through home ownership. Shelley Halstead is the founder and executive director.
It's the way that you enter the middle class. I mean, I came from a family that owned their own home, and that security, it was never questioned for me. And I want that to be a part of as many Black women's lives as possible.
Shelley, who's 50, moved to Baltimore 5 years ago from Seattle, where she'd had a long career as a carpenter. She was stunned by what she saw.
These houses that were completely falling in on themselves, you know, walls bowing outward and like windows missing.
And yet they were beautiful, century-old brick row houses with big windows and ornate cornices.
I was like, oh my God, there's so much potential. Like, as a builder, it's all you see. You're like, I can fix that.
She found what she thought would be the perfect block on Edding Street, with modest two-story houses that would be affordable for first-time buyers. Most of them had been abandoned for years and were owned by the city. But Shelley's discovery came too late. The houses were about to be demolished. Even so, she made her pitch to the housing commissioner.
I'm going to rebuild this block. We're going to do 10 houses, and we're going to make 10 women, 10 Black women homeowners.
They'd create a whole community with a shared garden and tool library. The response?
Yeah, sorry.
But later that day, she got an email.
And that was it. They found the wiggle room, and I was like, we will buy them. Let's start fundraising.
She bought 4 houses for $5,000. Not each, 5,000 total. One of them even had a roof. All Shelley needed now was her first buyer slash builder. She called a local construction training program and found Quanche, who already had a master's degree in public health, but wanted to learn to build.
And almost immediately, I was just like, oh, she's a go-getter, right? Like, that's, you got to have a good first one. And she was. I mean, I drove her to that block, and she was like, I see it. I see it.
For 4.5 months, Shelley and Quanche worked side by side. They knocked down walls, built a new staircase, put in skylights.
I think most of the hard work is in your head. It's all mental.
Actually, some of the hardest work was financial. After the rehab, the plan was for Quanche to buy the house from Black Women Build for $80,000, roughly the cost of the work. She had steady income from her job at the health department and as a part-time hospice aide. But when she applied for a mortgage, the bank rejected the appraisal.
They were saying that the appraisal price was too high for the location because, as you can see, it's almost exclusively abandoned houses.
And that's a big part of why Baltimore still has 16,000 vacant buildings and why it's so hard to turn around blighted neighborhoods all over the country. Shelley Halstead says it costs more to renovate these houses than the market says they're worth.
Which is why a nonprofit has to do it, right? We're not getting how much we put in.
Ultimately, they proved to the bank that the block was on the rise, and Quanche got the loan, along with some grants for down payment assistance. Her mortgage payments worked out to $645 a month. All that was left was to sign the papers, but by then, the pandemic had changed everything. No one could come to her closing. She couldn't have a housewarming party.
It didn't feel like a happy, happy moment. It felt more like a business transaction to me. All of the, I think, excitement has kind of, like, lost its place.
But Quanche's settling in. She bought a pale green love seat and set up her sewing machine, and she's getting used to being one of just a few people on her block.
I do feel like a pioneer, and it's a bit, I mean, it's not a space that I'm not used to.
And she won't be lonely for long. Quanche's starting another master's program in social work later this month. Black Women Build has begun construction on the other 3 houses and is working to buy several more. And Shelley's recruited the next 2 homeowners to move in. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
We've got pictures of the block that Black Women Build is restoring. Also, you can hear more from Amy's series about Baltimore's vacancy crisis at our website, marketplace.org. Amy had us on a single block in Baltimore. We are going to go to Houston now and hear from somebody who's been spending a lot of time driving the blocks of that city and setting up shop here and there, trying to make it work in the middle of a pandemic.
My name is Jose Sanchez. I am from Houston, Texas, and I am a food truck owner. I originally opened I Empanadas in October. I went and found a set location where I was going to be at on a daily. And quite frankly, it wasn't going so well. I was going to work and I would be there for 8 hours and I would get 2 customers a day. So I had to look for other avenues, like outside office buildings or outside apartment complexes. The month of January is when I started doing that. And it actually started going very well. It was starting to pick up steam. It was going well. But as soon as this pandemic happened, a lot of these places had to shut down. So what started happening was a lot of these HOAs around the city have requested food trucks to go to their neighborhoods. You know, it's kind of hit or miss. Like, you go to a location that will be really good and you'll make almost $500 in 4 hours. And then the next time you go to that place, which is like a week later or 2 weeks later, you only make $70. You know, it's very unfortunate for us food truck owners because you go with the anticipation of, oh, I've already been here before and I made this much. And you go and it just completely is not what you expected. My son was actually born September 2019. And I had opened the truck in October. So ever since I've opened it, I've had a little one. It's my main focus is to be able to provide for him and my family, pretty much. This is my only income at the moment. So I need to make this work, and I'm trying to, you know, find every way possible to do it.
Jose Sanchez in Houston, Texas. Do us a favor, would you? Tell us about your personal economy. You can do it online at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, hearkening back to the top of the program and that tidbit about Airbnb going public. In a neat bit of a new economy company taking advantage of a dying old economy company, turns out, I read at CNN today, that you can rent out on Airbnb the world's last blockbuster video rental store, which is, as it happens in Bend, Oregon. You get a sofa bed, a big TV, you get free snacks. Also, because you're going to need it, you get a VCR. All right, we're out of here, but first, a brief moment of industrial economic context on this Tuesday. In July, for the 6th straight month, Boeing reported plane cancellations outnumbered new plane orders, and by a lot, too. 43 cancellations last month, zero new orders. Our digital and on-demand team includes Ufuk Mebetolu, Olga Oxman, Beth Perlman, Erica Phillips, Brian Ronahan, and Tony Wagner. Star Nieves is our executive director of On Demand. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.